So this dear little kid, Jackson Mayervich, dad's little leaguer, when he considers the potential of life in front of him, what he could be as a man, what he could build, all that life has to offer, anything that he could explore, what he could become as a person, his ambition, Mark, it's not to be president of the United States.
No.
It's not to be an astronaut like I always wanted to be.
Nope.
It's not even to be a big leaguer, a baseball player. It is to be retired.
When I see something like that, a young man full of potential, capable of setting awesome ambitions to build something that lasts, what a freaking waste.
Hi, I'm Steve. For nearly 30 years, I've been a pastor and disciple maker, and what I really love doing is helping guys be better followers of Christ and better leaders at home.
I'm Mark, a certified financial planner with an MBA and an Ivy League degree who wants to make sure you're making the smartest money decisions possible.
And this is Abraham's Wallet. Join us weekly and create a culture in your family of multi-generational prosperity, spiritually, relationally, physically, intellectually, and financially. Run your home, your dough, like a biblical boss.
Well, it's March 1st, and that means in my house, we stayed up till midnight and then we went straight to the Nordstrom.
Got on Amazon and ordered away.
Not true, although there was a grocery store run that my wife made quite early in the day today.
That may have happened under my roof as well.
It was not a record-breaking Lotto Feb for us. We actually had some unexpected expenses pop up that we had to deal with, but we saved a lot of money. We saved a six-figure amount of money. No, I'm sorry. Erase that.
Five figures if you add the decimal and the 2 cents behind it.
We saved four-figure amounts of money.
Okay. All right. Four's good.
It was still enough to have a really pleasant and family culture-building conversation about where we're going to give, and it did the Lotto things for us of self-denial. Lotto Feb is the Lenten season, and March 1st is like Mardi Gras or something.
Yes, it is. It is like that for us as well. I just kept saying, this is our muscle building time of just saying no to ourselves. Because when you have, as we've talked about, you've got the gift cards saved up and this isn't real money. I know that it's not costing our bottom line for you to get this food, but we just have to practice saying no. That's the point. We are in the Lenten season. And if you live in Cincinnati, Ohio, or a similarly Catholic town, this is a very German, Czech, Catholic town I live in.
I know what you're going to say, and I'm excited. Let's hear it.
I can't wait to finish this sentence. Then there are fish fries happening all over the place. And our local, like Cincinnati Magazine, there's always a review of the 50 best fish fries in town, blah, blah, blah. But I have a resource that is not even published anywhere. And it's that I hang out with a gray beard whose name is Larry Plum, who has lived in this area a very long time. And he and his wife make a habit of visiting all of the fish fries. And he has told me that the very best fish fry, one of the top five, you would say in the city, they're all comparable. I don't think he ranks the top few. One of the top is less than a mile from my front doorstep. So tonight, it's Friday when we record this, I will be going to the Cardinal Pacelli Christ the King Catholic Church fish fry tonight.
That's awesome. I wish such a thing existed in Utah, but the Mormons do not fry fish.
I'll be
darned. I don't think they know what Lent is. None of that. There's not a fish fry within 1,000 miles of me right now, I don't think.
No.
I think I am ready to get into it because I got a bone to pick.
And here it comes. This is the fish bone I hope to avoid tonight. What's the bone?
What I'd like to do today is dig into maybe the thing that was instrumental in the beginning of Abraham's wallet. Like when we started getting excited about talking about finances, one of the big influences around us was that there were all these social media people and bloggers and podcasters talking about the idea that you could not do the typical thing that is the American path and work until you're 65 and then retire. Then you could be frugal. You could buck the system and do something different, and you don't have to follow the same path with your money. And that all sounded great. But what has happened when I talk to people in their 20s and early 30s, one of the number one things I hear is, you know what I'm really interested in is this thing called early retirement, or sometimes you hear financial independence. The acronym is financially independent retiring early, or FIRE. And sometimes I hear this from believers who go, this would just be such a responsible thing to do with my money. It uses tactics like extreme frugality, and it seems like a pretty wise way to deal with money. I'm not going to be conspicuously spending here and there. And then I have all my time to myself. I don't have to go to work anymore, and I could use that to do ministry or whatever they say.
Right, sure, sure.
And I'm here to say that I think either retirement itself, if you make that a goal, or even just the concept of my goal is financial independence, that's a terrible goal. And it's even, I'm going to say, there's an element to making that your goal that is sin, and it's bad. And I want to tell you, retirement is not a goal. It could be your goal. Retirement is a terrible goal.
Fair.
And before you hang up the phone and say, screw these guys, I'm not saying that we don't need to plan ahead for times when we will need money to buy groceries and we can no longer go out and earn a salary or run a business actively. I'm not saying that. Every financial plan I've ever written talks about how you're going to fund your life in retirement as one of the topics that we hit. But when you say my goal, the thing I'm working towards is this concept of retirement, I think you're making a giant mistake. And I want to talk about why the financial independence and retire early movement has really taken off, where I think it conflicts with the scriptures teaching on how we're supposed to handle money and our old age. And I'm also going to give them a little nod and say there are tactics that those people are using that we can all learn from. So it's not all bad. But what do you think, Stephen?
This is a fascinating thesis you are laying out. I think it challenges a lot of people's assumptions out there. How you're going to get through this in one episode, we shall see. But yeah, I'm very interested. Let's go.
One of the things that, as we were talking about doing this episode, I sent you a little screenshot of a Little League game. And we have young Jackson, spelled with an X, Mayorvich. And they're showing the Little League World Series on TV. And one of those things they do is they'll put a little fun fact about each kid when they're showing their picture. And
yeah,
he's 5'11", 125 pounds, age 12. But it says dream job, retirement. This thing that I've been talking about, it goes a lot deeper than just, hey, I'm 30 and I'm working at a cubicle job and hating my life, so I'm going to get out of.
That's right.
It's in the water that we've taught even our 12-year-olds who are pitching on television. They're living this cool experience and they go, what I really dream of is retirement.
It's insane. I don't think I had heard the word retirement when I was 12. I wouldn't have known what it was. And it absolutely wouldn't have been on the top 100 things I wanted to do when I grew up. It's such a sad comment on our society. And before you even go into this stuff, I just want to encourage everybody as you listen, would you please do the kingdom of God a favor and decide before we even start in, I'm not going to walk down the road of the culture, which ends in death and destruction for my family. This is what Mark's about to do. He's about to analyze and slice and dice these cultural lies around us. I want you to decide. I want, if there's any of this in me, I want it broken down as I listen. And then what I want built back up in its place is something that follows a scriptural model. a favor is about to be done for you if you will tune in. So hang with us.
Yeah. I want to introduce the problem first. I don't know if you know this, but retirement, as we talk about it today, is not an age-old phenomenon. And it was actually created, I'm going to suggest, by real estate developers. In the late 50s, early 60s, there was this real estate developer who created a project called Sun City, Arizona. And it's one of the first massive scale retirement communities ever built. And they started marketing it. They ran ads in the New York Times and in the LA Times and advertising it in these big cities. It was inexpensive. You could check out of your job. And basically, whereas retirement historically has been, you're no longer physically capable of working the way that you used to. So now you're usually around. You might be around at your kid's house. Grandpa's sitting over there, and whatever is occupying your time, you're still a part of the daily rhythms of the family. And what Sun City did is it said, we could tell these people, don't spend your golden years on the couch. Go to Sun City where you can have a perma vacation. And that was a start. It was wildly successful. Florida became a very popular destination, but people started doing them all over the place. And you see it today still. And what happened is sometime after the shift, people started looking at Grandpa, who was playing golf every day, and he's moved to sunny Florida. And they said, hey, you know, I would like to do that as well instead of going to the office every day. And so they began to think, what would happen if I retired at 60 instead of 65? If I can do that, what if I did it at 50? And that makes sense, right? You're watching people just basically on the party boat for a long time and going, well, if I could do that, would be more fun than what I'm doing now. That's ingredient number one to the problem we have. And ingredient number two is, this is not news, we have a consumer culture that is pretty much out of control. So I went back, I pulled an inflation-adjusted consumption on a per capita basis from 1901 to the present. And the charts don't look real. It's we consume on a per capita basis something like 70 times what somebody would have consumed back at the start of the 1900s. So much of what we buy now is disposable, so there's all of that consumption. We buy entertainment at a wildly higher rate. We just got done with Lotto Feb, and it was like, man, we only spent $40 for the whole month on family entertainment in Lotto Feb. And like, great grandpa bought a radio two generations ago, and that entertained us for the next 100 years as a family.
That's right.
So consumption is out of control. And I think a lot of people that maybe they don't have any interest in our Jesus stuff or the Bible, they still look at the consumption culture and go, that's gross. And I know enough to know that doesn't lead to happiness. And so they say, I want to ditch this toxic overconsumption model. And if I do, and I just suck down my spending to the absolute bare minimum, I realize I also no longer have to go do the job I don't like. So I can get to the perma vacation,
right,
and not do the consumption. It seems like a win. Let's go. And that is how the FIRE movement started to gain steam. And my contention is that FIRE, or this goal of financial independence, retire early, has replaced a real purpose or a goal, which would be like, hey, I want to spend all of my time on grandparenting. That seems like a really cool goal. I want to disciple 10 grandchildren. That's a goal. I want to not have to go to work. That's not a goal. The FIRE movement has taken a goal and replaced it with a mechanism that can be helpful, but isn't a real goal. And so that mechanism is extreme frugality and a super high savings rate.
It strikes me, as you're talking about Sun City, Arizona, that kind of move wouldn't hold any allure in the old classical model of family, where it's easiest to think of it as life on a farm, because that is a productive household, just to use it as an example. So if you've got a multi-generational family living on a homestead in a farm, there are jobs that three-year-olds can do in that setting. There are jobs that 8-year-olds can do in that setting. There are jobs that 30-year-old men can do in that setting that nobody else can do because of their strength and endurance, et cetera. But there are jobs that 70, 80, and 90-year-olds not only can do, but need to do for the thing to keep running. There's childhood help. There's stuff to deal with the animals. There are maintenance issues because grandpa knows more about the tractor than anybody else. He could tinker for 3 days just to get the machinery back up running, et cetera, et cetera. There's this picture of this ongoing thing so that if you told grandpa with a multi-generational productive home, what if you went out to Sun City in Arizona and he would just go, I already have a life. Do you want me to cash in my relationship with my family and my life? But in the world of atomization, where all of these independent homes, they're all separated. And once your children have grown up, there's nothing for you to do but sit around and wait to die. And your usefulness as far as being productive is only seen as when you clock into the business and clock out of the business. And when you are not useful to them anymore, where keeping you on the staff is more expensive than bringing a new guy, they cut you. And now you're left all alone and you go, Sun City? That sounds okay. That sounds better than being in the same apartment in New York City that I've lived in while I raised my kid, but now it's empty and lifeless. Maybe we could go vacate. It just strikes me how a lot of the things that we rep around here, and we believe in the multi-generational home, and we believe in a productive household where there's contributing members to keep the engine of the house going. If you degrade those things, then the modern idea of retirement becomes attractive. And as you say, once the modern idea of retirement becomes attractive to you, then it starts to eat up everything so that we end up with a 12-year-old who wants retirement.
I agree. As I get into the specifics of how this grew and what does the Bible say about it, I want to really quickly just mention two things that were influential to me. I know one of them you introduced me to, so there was influence on you. But nice. The first book that really said, let me lay out a path for how you do this financial independence, retire early thing, like all of the stuff we're going to talk about, had a lot of truth in it. It was a book that was published in 1992 called Your Money or Your Life. Mm. And the thesis was, most people, they call it making a dying instead of making a living. So they're spending their life having a job that wears them out and leaves no room for personal fulfillment. And by reframing money and earnings that gets spent as trading away that life energy, we can become more conscious about the things we buy and especially about the things that don't bring fulfillment. We can just not do them. And so tracking all your spending becomes a gateway to more fulfillment in life when your purchases align with your meaning. Now, there's a lot to that we would go, yeah, we've talked about budgeting and saying your budget should be a funding plan for your family vision. We agree that you shouldn't spend money on stuff that's going to not bring long-term value and fulfillment. The guy who wrote it famously at a couple points in time realized in the summer, in the spring, in the fall, I'm just happy in New York City and I don't even need an apartment. I can sleep outside for part of the year. And he lived on nothing and saved money and worked a normal job. So he had a ton of money saved up. And at some point, I don't have to go to that life draining job anymore. So that was the first book. To me, the big point I want to make about all of this fire stuff is this book's entire focus was on yourself. Think about yourself. Mm. Think about how you feel. Do you feel bummed out by work? Think about that more. Think about yourself more. And it leads to death. Fast forward 20 years, and we get to Mr. Money Mustache, which was probably the blog that really, for our generation, was the most popular resource initially on this concept that you can live with extreme frugality. The guy who wrote it was named Pete Adney, and he retired, I think, when he turned 30 from being a software developer, and he was married. They had, I think, $600,000 in investments, and a home that they had paid the mortgage off on, and they realized we can live on $17,000 a year or something like that. And so we've got a pile of money that will produce that, so we're done. And his writing was funny. Both of these resources, go read them, check them out. He had some really interesting tips on his grocery budget stuff that he talked about. You and I both were like, wow, he's got some ideas that we could save a bunch of money on groceries. Before I give away the ending of the story, what are your memories of the Mr. Money Mustache days? Because we were both excited whenever a new article published back then.
Some of those goals are great. To not be living paycheck to paycheck, that's a really good goal. To, obviously, we believe in low-do feb, so there's something about shrinking your footprint. Like, this is how much money it takes for me to have a successful week. I'd like for that number to be lower. I think it has to do with humility. I think it has to do with, as you say, just not being a selfish consumer. That's a good goal. And that's why my eyebrows were raised at a guy who seemed smart. There's something about restoring what man was created to be, what our capabilities are. So, for instance, I remember one of his maxims was, you should never drive a car less than 5 miles. You should be taking a bicycle, which is the most efficient form of transportation there is. And if you have a bicycle that's got a pouch in the back that you can put some groceries in, and you've got a trailer that you can put a kid in, you're set. What do you need a car for? Those things are really like challenging in a good way. They're very provocative. And that's what the allure was for me.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I remember biking to work because he shifted my brain and went, the savings is not the gas money. That's one little slice of the savings. There's also, you're getting your exercise in at that time of the day. You're not putting the miles on your car. You're healthier. And so there's impacts that are financial of that. And all these things come together.
Yep.
So again, the whole FIRE movement, great tactics, lots of them. I'm going to talk about that in a second. But I contend that Mr. Money Mustache was basically a witty repackaging of the entirely self-focused life that is espoused in Your Money or Your Life.
Fair.
And so it's not maybe a shocker to find out that Mr. Money Mustache, his story right now is divorce, broken apart family. Drugs were a part of his life. Of course, he no longer had to live in extreme frugality when he ended up with one of the most popular blogs on the internet for a while. But that's what happens when you focus on yourself. And just a very quick sidebar. I don't know how many people listen to the Joe Rogan podcast. It's one of the most widely distributed media things that happens in the world now. And this week they had Abigail Schreier on. And she wrote a book about the contagious transgenderism craze that stirred everybody up 2 years ago. It was a good book. She just wrote another book about therapy. And her thesis is about how dangerous therapy is for kids and how overused it is in many cases. But the takeaway that I think is relevant here, though, is she said over and over, thinking about yourself too much is extremely bad for you and leads to worsening problems and all manners of negative outcomes in your life. So that's true whether we're talking about your money. That's true whether we're talking about, like, I've had health stuff where I was like, I got too wound up and all I thought about was my health. And thankfully, I have a wife that came along and went, stop it. You're fine. Move on. And I think sometimes the FIRE movement does that to us.
Totally.
Today, there's tens of thousands of FIRE content creators. If you go on Twitter and just type FIRE money, you will find hundreds and hundreds of Twitter accounts that are all about this. And basically, the idea is live on as little as possible so that you can pay off all your debt, save into a taxable account where you'll have enough to fund your expenses without withdrawing more than 4% of whatever the nest egg is per year. And then basically just live at that level for the rest of your life and enjoy the fact that you don't have to show up to work. And so why is this a problem? Like, why would I be upset about this having taken over? Because I often think that we confuse tactics with goals in the financial world. So all day long, I talk to people and I say, give me a sense for what are your goals? What are you working towards in life? And that's a lot of times why people come to a financial planner. And they will say things like, I want to own 6 rental properties by the time I turn 30. Or I want to have a net worth of this much or this much in my health savings account. Or I want to be financially independent so that I can quit my job. But usually people go, even if I decide to keep working, I just want to know that I can do it. And I don't think those are goals in and of themselves. You can make them your goal. You can certainly say that's my goal and that's what I'm working towards. But there really has to be a why behind these tactics. Otherwise, achieving them leaves people bereft of meaning. And I'm not just talking about Christ followers who maybe have kind of that sense of calling and purpose. Everybody that I see who makes their goal a net worth number or even the rental house thing. Like, Mark, I thought rental houses were great. Yeah, they can be an excellent way to build wealth. But why do you want to own those? I'm trying to build a multi-generational culture and steward resources so that they can be deployed in the kingdom. And these are the places I'm gifted and called. Now we're starting to talk goals. I could care less if you own rental homes or stocks. Like, nobody cares. I thought it was interesting. I looked at a paper that was published by the Social Security Administration. And the thesis statement, I'm going to read it so I don't get it wrong, but it says, logistic regression results indicate that controlling for current age, year of birth, education, marital status in 1973, and race, men who retire early die sooner than men who retire at age 65 or older.
Incredible stat.
I think a lot of people have heard that, but it's just flat out true. If you retire early, you are more likely to die sooner. And yet, there's a craze of early retirement.
This is just like when we hear that people who win the lottery, their lives fall apart and they end up poor. Every one of us says, man, that's a bummer. Why don't you try it on me? I think I might be different in this case. There are so many times when I want to put my arm on a young man's shoulders and go, you are not an exception to the rule. I'm sorry, but if it's this case with people in general, it'll be this case with you. If you retire early and you lose your the thing that turns the crank for you, I got to go out and produce. If that happens to you at 35 because of some windfall or because you figured out a way to game the system so that you don't have to work anymore, it's going to go badly for your soul from that point forward. It's just the way that we're made.
That's right. Yeah. And even if you just Google like how to find meaning in retirement, I just looked through Reddit pages and people talking to each other.
Oh boy.
And it is bleak, whether we're talking about the financial independent retire early people or just standard 70-year-olds. There's a lot of people out there expressing pain and difficulty because they don't know what their purpose is. I don't think that the Bible paints a picture of life that jives with the FIRE movement.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you a few reasons. We could go through so many scriptures on this stuff.
Give us a bird's eye view of what the Bible might say about this topic.
Okay. Three big buckets that I'm going to put my biblical wisdom in where I don't think it lines up with the retire early thing. Number one, we've talked about this. Work is godly and required. Let me throw some verses at you. Genesis 2:15. Early in the narrative, we hear that the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work and to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
This was perfection, and work is a part of it. This isn't like, sorry, Adam, you biffed it. Now you got to work. No, this is part of the design for who he made us to be. 2 Thessalonians 3:10 through 12 says, for even when we were with you, we would give you this command. If anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat. For we hear that some among you walk in idleness, not busy at work, but busybodies.
What?
Now such persons we command and encourage in the Lord Jesus Christ to do their work quietly and earn their own living. So laying some requirements down, quit being idle. To me, that says, even if you've got enough money to buy bread, we still command idleness, not an option for you.
In this same era, when you're talking about the early 90s and this kind of work less, retire earlier kind of thing, a major cultural artifact from that time is the 4-hour work week from Tim Ferriss. And it's the same kind of, could I lower the load on me, particularly in my youth? And the biblical answer is no, you can't lower it. You can't lower the load on you. It's good for you to bear a load as a young as the scriptures
say. Tim Ferriss's life, also a great example of what happens when you pursue his path. Those who work their land will have abundant food, but those who chase fantasies have no sense. A lot of this financial independence stuff to me sounds like fantasies. I've had people just tell me straight up, I want to play video games all day, or I want to play golf all day. That's kind of a disgusting fantasy, but it's still a fantasy. And lastly, Proverbs 12:24, diligent hands will rule, but laziness ends in forced labor. Again, it doesn't say unless you've got enough money to be lazy. It just says laziness ends in forced labor. So work is godly and required. Number two, wealth is increased over generations. It's not there to let us scrape by for one lifespan. So the Bible doesn't talk about wealth as something that's just get what you need to meet basic needs and then you're done with that capital. I think my two scriptures that are probably most commonly cited scriptures in the Abraham's Wallet podcast, Matthew 25, verses 26 and 27 says, "You knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming, I should have received what was my own with interest." And if you haven't heard this parable, it's about a master who leaves town and leaves his servants with different amounts of money. And when he comes back, they show him what they've done with his money. And one has multiplied it many times. One has multiplied it a little bit. And the last one buried it in the ground because he was scared of losing it. And the master is not happy with that one. So there is a biblical mandate to grow things that we have been put in responsibility of. My other verse here, Proverbs 13, which says, "A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous." Even families that don't follow Christ, then when I'm doing financial plans, I'm like, I think wisdom is wisdom. I'm going to encourage them to leave a little, even if it's just a token, let's leave a little inheritance for the children's children. Let's start implementing some wisdom in the way we run our money. I don't think it saves you. I don't 100%. Think it justifies you, but it's still a wise move. And maybe it's a first step towards ordering your life according to God's plan. So money is multi-generational. Wealth is multi-generational. There's a responsibility to increase it over generations. It's not there to just let you scrape by. And the last one, setting our heart on money is always bad, whatever that looks like. Psalm 62:10 says, "Riches increase, do not set your heart on them." And there's a real sense in which the FIRE movement and its devotees place their hope in their money. All the while, they're patting themselves on the back and saying, "I am so frugal and I'm so anti-consumption." But all they're thinking about is their money. Their heart is set on their money and their wealth.
Yeah, if I can just interject, one of the great threats of that whole FIRE movement, and this was definitely the case with Mr. Money Mustache, and you even mentioned the kind of live on 4% of your net worth idea, is that you have to live that way. You have to draw out a finish line. Here's the finish line. This is what I'm going to pursue. And you can kill yourself to reach that finish line, which would be sinful. It would be a sin against God and against your relationships, et cetera, to kill yourself in pursuit of that money. And then the terrible thing might happen to you, which is you get to the finish line. And so God's design is that we simply are faithful to work. We live below our means. We put our money to work. And there's some element, we're financial planners, we do planning. But there's some element in which in our souls, in our spirit, we would say, it doesn't matter what my net worth is at 60 or at 70, I'm going to continue to sow. I'm going to continue to work. I'm going to continue to manage the things that God has under me, not necessarily working for income. I know you're going to get to the biblical picture, but just the feeling of there's a finish line and I need to hit this number. And when I hit this number, then the coast is clear. God just didn't make us to work like that. We're just supposed to be diligent and leave to Him. What is my net worth? I don't know. He can worry about that. You understand what I mean? It's not that we don't know what that number is. It's that that number ceases to be a finish line for us. And what comes to mind for me is seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, which includes working for us. And all these things will be added to you as well. I'm not going to worry about the future, nor am I going to rub my hands together and twirl my mustache and think about what a rich sucker I'm going to be. Bitcoin, if I may insert here, Bitcoin has increased in value in the last month by 45%. So there's some part of me that kind of, I get little stars in my eyes. I'm tempted to. And I like to check on it about every 3 hours and see where is it at right now. And you can imagine, according to whatever your holdings are, imagine, what if it goes to the moon? And what will that mean to me? And the fact is, we're supposed to not be motivated by any of those things. We're supposed to be wise. We diversify our investments and let them grow. And I'm going to continue doing what I do, period.
It's true. And yet, can we learn anything from these FIRE movement people? Of course. And really quickly, I would say overconsumption doesn't make you happy, but does dramatically increase your need to work. So I remember when I was a kid, smoking was still a thing. People still smoked a pack a day, and they would tell us in elementary school how much that cost you. And you have to work an extra 4 years of your life to afford this thing. Well, that's true of your latte habit, and it's true of deciding I'm going to lease a BMW every 2 years, whatever your thing is. So you need a lot less than you think. You don't need to have what the culture tells you you need. I think that's a valuable thing to consider. And kind of along those lines, choices that you think are entirely required to exist in our society often actually aren't. So, you know, the example of driving a car to work, not actually mandatory. You can choose not to do that, and it can actually break you off of a hedonic treadmill that just keeps you needing to make more and more and more. So those are all good things.
Yep.
And my recommendation is take the tactics, just not the goal. And really what I want to close with is, what does the Bible say about retirement? And this could be a whole series of podcasts. Maybe we'll do a whole episode on what is biblical retirement, but I want to give you at least some thoughts on what the Bible paints a picture of as we kind of age and how we use our time, because I do think that the scriptures aren't silent on this. Retirement isn't a sin, but idleness is. Even when you're old. Job 32:7 says, I thought age should speak, advanced years should teach wisdom. There is a requirement of you in advanced years to actually be imparting that. Doesn't sound to me like it would be that easy to do from Sun City if I just retreat and use my time on cruises and golf courses. Psalm 92:14 describes the righteous. And it says, they will still bear fruit in old age. They will stay fresh and green. So there's an expectation of fruitfulness all the way to the end. I don't think it means that you keep your 400-pound deadlift when you're 90. Physically fresh and green, no, but still fruitful to actually continue producing up until the end. So those are anti-idleness pictures. Two, I'm pulling from 1 Timothy 5:8, which we've talked about here. Caring for aging family is a requirement. Paul says that if you don't do it, you're worse than an unbeliever. But that also has this like flip side. It means that if you're the aging person, the model we see in scripture is that you're still in the household. Again, you're not in an over 55 community out in Florida. You're still in the household. Now, I don't think that means you have to live under the same physical roof as your kids. For some people, that's actually a great option, but does it mean that you're still deeply involved in the raising of children and grandchildren, in the help with running the machine, in Stephen's example, you're tinkering on the tractor because no one else knows how that tractor works. So
yeah.
You're still a part of the household. And lastly, I think we often devalue the work that is required in this stage of life. Even if we abandon financial capital and let's just talk about spiritual capital, we think the guy that's out there evangelizing and preaching and discipling young guys at coffee shops, man, he is pushing the kingdom forward. But you and I were sitting in a cabin in Cadillac, Michigan, Stephen, when our mutual friend Mark Douglas, who's been here on the podcast, told us a story about his grandfather that really stuck with me and painted a picture for me of what this looks like. And his grandfather's name was Ransom Douglas. Do you remember hearing this story?
Okay. I've heard many stories about Ransom, and I don't exactly know which one you're about to quote.
Maybe you have even more Ransom anecdotes to add to this, but he said that my grandpa was a farmer, and so he was very used to the idea that I'm going to work really hard to plant, to prepare the field, to get it ready. But then there's this time period where I'm kind of sitting there, and the phrase he used was praying in the harvest. And so there was a stage in his grandpa's life where he said he would stay in one spot in the house all day. And I said, Grandpa, don't you just get tired of sitting here? Is this depressing? Like, is this difficult? And he said, I have been planting for the last, I don't remember, 75 years, Mark. And I am very happy to sit here now and pray the harvest in for all this hard work that I've put in because I want to see it. And I think that we often don't value that kind of idea that just being the one who is, A, blessed with the opportunity to see future generations, that would be cool. I would love to have that blessing. But also that we can affect the kingdom in prayer, even if we are so elderly that that's all we can do is sit in one place. To me, that guy understood that he had value and a place in the household and was not idle, even though his body was done. Physically, he was no longer able to do, he wasn't going to go tinker on the tractor even. His body was done and he wasn't eating the bread of idleness. He was still engaged in the work that the Lord had called him to. To me, that was a huge encouragement and even helped paint a picture for if the Lord is kind enough to let me stay here until I'm that exhausted physically, I'll be trying to be like Ransom Douglas.
That's great. The other thing that comes to mind, I know we've talked about this when talking about retirement and even about eldership in the past, is that if things are on a level, or maybe even they're weighted towards the bottom of our famous five capitals, and you spend your youth building up physical capital, emotional or mental capital, and did I say financial? I don't think so. You're building those things. There's the seesaw tilts as you get older. So there comes a point where I'm not building financial capital, except maybe passively on investments. I'm not building physical capital anymore. I'm pouring those things out because what I'm building at the end of my life is more spiritual capital. It's more relationships. That's the gold that I've spent my whole life accumulating. And now that's the best thing I could possibly give to my family and to the kingdom at large. That thing tilts towards the end of your life in God's economy. And as you say, it's not that you stopped working. You might have stopped working for income. You haven't stopped working. You're still contributing. You're just contributing different things.
On the topic of what does the Bible have to say about retirement? How does it conflict with the pop narrative about retiring or maybe even retiring early? And my encouragement to the guys listening to this and even to the ladies, I know some of you listen, is just pursue the fullness of what God has called you to over a life, which means there is no finish line where I get to just say, once I get there, I guess I'm done and I can kick back and waste my time. The Lord has purposes for every day that he puts you here. So we just encourage you to get after it and to work hard to his glory.
That's great. I didn't think you could do it. I didn't think you could cover all that in an hour. And you did. Well done. And if I wasn't already, I am newly convinced that retirement makes a terrible goal.
Hey, if you liked this content, be sure to like it and subscribe and share it with somebody. And remember, no matter how you're doing and leading your family, God's love for you is huge and His grace is greater.